Talking of scams, a rise in scams means many of us are now refusing to answer the phone to unknown numbers. In the past year, phone and text message fraud was up by 85% in the UK. This is according to a recent report by Which? It says the jump was fueled by more people getting things delivered during the pandemic, which led to a corresponding high rise in fake parcel delivery text notifications. Now, earlier, we spoke to Wayne May from Scam Survivors, a company which helps raise awareness of scams. And he told us it's best not to answer calls.
If you do get a call or you do get a text, don't answer it. Don't reply to it. If they claim to be the bank, if they claim to be the TV licensing people, anything like this, contact them directly. Don't reply directly to the mail itself or the phone call itself. They can actually make their websites look exactly like a legitimate company as well. They will take all the main details off a company's website and put it onto their own. So if they give you a link, you could think that you're on the HSBC website, for example, but it's not. It's their own website that they have created purely to scam people.
We also spoke with Sarah earlier in the show, who works for the civil service.
I got a phone call on my work phone, and I do work for the civil service.
Right.
And a woman was like, she sounded elderly, and she was like, OK, I'm sorry, you finally answered. Because I don't answer numbers I don't know normally.
Yes.
And she goes, I've got my bank details, where should I send the £5,000?
No.
And I'm like, whoa, hey, wind up. What are you talking about, my love? What's your name? What's going on? She goes, no, I just got off the phone about 20 minutes ago. They said they needed my bank details so I could give them to them because I owed HMRC £5,000 or they were going to send me to prison. And she was literally panicking. And I was like, okay, love, sit down. This is a scam. No one will do this. I do not need your bank details. I said, how come you got to call me?
Yes.
And she goes, well, I told them I had to go and find my bank details. And they said, oh, we'll hold. And she goes, no, I don't want to waste your phone bill. So she hung up and dialed back on the number they called from.
And they called
from... And it was my work number.
No. Well, Anne-Marie also called us earlier, and she told us about a close call she had with a scammer.
I know about the HMRC scam. I read all about the scams. I know all about them. But I must have been caught off my guard that day. Lucky thing my daughter was here. I'm on the phone. They phoned me up, said the same thing. You're going to go to prison and you're going to be locked up and you owe this money. Obviously, I've got a good heart. But I was really frightened, Jim. Okay.
Right.
I was really frightened. They shouldn't be allowed to do that because if you got a weak heart or a bad heart, you would be, very frightened of what they tell you. And I'm surprised they have not stopped these people because, you know what, Jim, okay, I was going to look for this thing and I'm thinking, my daughter's saying to me, Mummy, who are you on the phone for? Just put the phone down. So anyway, I told my daughter and she said she phoned up the proper HMRC afterwards and gave them the number and all that. You know what? They had the number. They even gave me their names. They gave me their names and I went to get the number to look what I was meant to look for. I didn't get that far, as I said. My daughter stopped me.
Uh-huh.
They were on the phone. I phoned up and they were still there. So I don't understand
what you mean
why...
They were holding on to the phone? They were...
Yes.
Wow.
And I phoned back again and I said to them, look, you better go and scam somebody else because I know you're talking... I know you're scammers.
Well, I mean, so many stories this evening. Well, Fevzi Turkalp is the editor at GadgetDetective.com. He joins us on the line now. Good evening. Good to have you back on the programme.
Evening.
What new tricks are scammers using?
Well, I mean, you've heard some of them there, haven't you? The fact that they can spoof where the message seems to come from, being a phone call or a text message, it can appear to be coming from the correct text message. So let's say you've been in text contact with Thames Water in the past, and then they spoof Thames Water's number that they use for text messaging. So when they send you a scam message, it actually appears in the same thread of messages that you've had before. It looks completely legitimate. And if you don't understand that it's not necessarily coming from where it purports to, then that gives a credence to it, which means that you think, oh, well, I wouldn't normally trust it, but it's obviously they've come through on the right number. And the same with phone calls. Interestingly enough, when the 5G network comes along, one of the benefits of that will be it will be harder for them to spoof the numbers. I hesitate to say impossible because, you know, nothing's impossible. But, it, there are security measures in there because the systems that are in use now, some of them date back to the 1970s in terms of the security. And it was a very different world then. You know, we could afford to be arguably a little bit more trusting. But it makes me sad, actually, Jamoke, when people say, oh, well, don't pick up the phone or, you know, if it's not a number you recognise, because, you know, there's a lot of legitimate calls that come in from blank numbers, including from the BBC.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, you get a call from the BBC. There's no number on the inside of it. So, but you have to have your wits about you. And the starting position has to be, I do not know who this person is. I'm not going to confirm any information that they may already have about me, right or wrong. And I'm certainly not going to give them any additional information. If they, you know, if someone rings you up and says, I just have to put you through security. And I said, well, pardon me, but I don't know who you are. How are you going to put me through security?
Yeah.
And often in the end, even when I'm 90% sure it's legitimate, let's say, I don't know, it's a call from the hospital about your appointment that's forthcoming. Maybe the clinic's been cancelled and there's no way of ringing them back. And there's seemingly no way of reaching them via switchboard and, you know, finding them. In those situations, you just have to tell them to write to you at the address that they already have and don't confirm that either. And it's a shame because we now live in a world where, you know, the starting position has to be, why is this so-and-so lying to me?
Yeah.
You know, and that's a great shame and it interferes with normal, you know, day-to-day communications. But we have flawed communication systems and therefore we have to be aware that it's not a matter of if we will receive a fraudulent call or a text or an email. It is when and how many.
So you sound like you're saying the way we are now operating, where we say we'll call them back or whatever, or we don't respond, is the way forward. There's no sort of guaranteed way to know that these people are scammers.
It's difficult because, you know, in the old days, you used to look it up in the phone book, right?
Yeah.
No, there's no phone books anymore. So you do a Google search. But as has been alluded to, you know, earlier in the show, that, you know, people create dummy websites that look realistic. So if you are not technically very confident and able to, you know, spot subtly different, you know, web addresses and so forth, then it's difficult. If you do a Google search, for example, then you have to look at not just the first one, but look at several and make sure that the one that you're getting through to, or look up earlier correspondence you've had that you know to be legitimate and call through on that number and try and verify. So you can take that person's name. Often they don't want to give you their names, interestingly, but you ask for their name, you ask for the department or location that they're in. If they don't want to give you a name, they should give you a unique identifying number. And then you try and reach that person again. But sometimes it's very difficult. Organizations are very diverse in how they're set up. Mm. So they can, you know, call centers can be all over the country or indeed all over the world. And sometimes the chances of you getting back to the same person is difficult. But the alternative is to take it on trust that they are who they say they are, which you know, may not always be wise. I think the other advice that I'd give Jamoke is that just be aware that when you're trying to assess the situation, because some of them are very obviously scams and some of them are not, but you know, just try and be aware, is this person saying things that are instilling a sense of urgency or even panic in me?
No.
My money's about to be stolen, I need to move it, they're about to come round and arrest me, you know, or you've come into a lot of money, but we need to deal with this today, otherwise you're going to lose the money. So it can be carrot or stick, but in some sense, they're creating urgency. And most things are not like that. You know, most things are not that urgent and can be dealt with. You know, just tell them to write to you, you know. The ones that are clearly scams, when I have time, I take pleasure in playing with them for up to half an hour.
Oh, really?
before dispatching them. If I don't have time, I impugn their parentage. Tell them that they're disgusting human beings and that they should rot in hell. But that's the sort of shorthand. But I do prefer the slow-cooked approach if I've got the time to deal with them. And I think it is my public service to do that, because if I can keep them on the phone for half an hour...
They're not going to scam anyone else.
In that half an hour, yeah. I immediately make them less productive. I'm already not productive, so it doesn't matter to me. But I can do that. And sometimes I put them on hold and... cough a little bit and ask them if they've heard this song and would they would they like to sing this song with me. I've been known to have a whistle, a referee's whistle by my side. You know, there are all sorts of, I don't recommend whistles because you can be done for assault. Goodness,
wow.
No, don't. You know, you'll probably have a scammer try and sue you.
Oh, goodness me. You'll get it back tenfold then. I mean, you're a gadget expert. And we live by our gadgets now. Everybody has some sort of phone. A lot of us do a lot of stuff on our phone. And so they become increasingly very precious to us. In fact, I think some people treasure their phone more than they do their children.
Yes.
Just interested.
Quite
to
rightly so, frankly, in some cases.
Yeah. So, I mean, top tips for protecting those gadgets.
So, obviously, there's the physical protection of the gadget itself. So, you've got the case and so forth. Then you've got the fact that you need to have the phone needs to be locked. It needs to lock itself in a short period of time after not being touched.
Yeah.
And everything needs to be locked. In terms of the applications and the services that you use, be it banking or shopping, increasingly there's an option for what's called second factor authentication. So the first factor is your password, something that you know.
Mm-hmm.
The second factor may be something that you are, so it could be your fingerprint, or it could be something that you possess, such as your telephone. So they might have to send you a text message, or there are applications called authenticators where when you're about to log in, you type in your password and then it asks you for a number generated by the authenticator app, which is only good for 30 seconds.
Mm.
So there are two ways in. And interestingly enough, this was a question that came up in respect of Afghanistan, where the Taliban are trying to get into people's social media accounts, and Facebook started to put extra locks on those accounts to try and stop them doing that. But one of the things that we can all do, Taliban or not, is put second factor authentication on, switch it on for everything, and change, don't use the same password for everything. That's deadly, because when one of the services to which you've given your email address and password gets hacked, and it is when that happens, you don't want them to have an email address and password that you've used. That might be a trivial thing that they've hacked, but if you've used it for your email address or your banking or your online shopping or your health details, that means that what they do when they steal that information, they run programs that try every major bank, every major retailer, every building society, everything that you may have used an email address and a password somewhere else, and they run it. It takes milliseconds to run it across thousands and thousands to see if you've been unwise enough to do that. Now the problem comes, we're told on the one hand, don't use the same password everywhere or anywhere, at the same time don't write it down, which means that you're expected to remember 30, 40, 50 passwords possibly.
Mm.
So what we do is we get a piece of software called password management software. So there are examples like 1Password, number 1 and password, or LastPass, as in the last password you'll ever need. There are free versions of both of those. What they do is two things. They generate unique and unguessable passwords every time you set up a new account or you update the email, the password of an existing account. They are unique, so they're different from each service, and they are unguessable, so they're not something that a human being would ever think to type in.
Right.
And then it stores them in a master database. You then protect that with a master password and second factor authentication. It's not perfect, but what it means is when you've got it set up nicely, you can go surfing over the internet like it was the 1990s, not having to actually physically enter passwords anymore. It just auto-fills them for you as you go through, and you've got the master lock on it. It's not without risk, but it's far more risky, in my opinion, to use the same password everywhere.
Hmm. Well, I know some people who are using the same password. I know that. I have friends who do that. I recently, my gadgets have started to tell me to update passwords. Like they'll go, oh, you know what? You've used this password X amount of times on one thing or the other on different sites, and therefore it forces you to update them once you go back onto that site.
Yeah.
So I suppose the technology is also saying, well, we'll work hand in hand. But it is difficult because you can't remember all the passwords. And even when they make auto suggestions, when you say don't write them down, you're like, well, how will I remember it? If something happens or I change this supplier, then I'm stuck with a password I don't recognize or don't know. I suppose you can always change them. But
You can if you set up sort of a way of resetting the password by other means. So you can provide them with a secondary email account or something like that. But it's a tricky thing to deal with all of this, and we're sort of forced to become experts, and it's become so much worse since COVID, not just because we're getting more packages, but because we're working from home.
Yeah.
And we're putting our own equipment very often to work, and the problem is you haven't necessarily got an IT department that's going to reach out to you and help you secure your machine in the way that maybe it would have been secured if you'd been working in an office somewhere.
So basically be as vigilant as you can and just suspect everybody.
Trust nobody. Same as politicians. Why is this so-and-so lying to me should be your initial thought. I know, I hate to spread that message, but in terms of safety,
yes,
I believe that is the starting position, at least, that you should have. And just be aware that these scams are happening, and just, you know, a legitimate person will understand your concerns and not push you. Almost happened to a member of my family. She almost got scammed, despite me having drilled it into her over the years of what not to do. And frankly, you know, I could get scammed. No one is above being scammed, frankly. But the thing that tipped her off in the end was the guy got impatient with her.
Oh, right.
He got impatient, and she said, "My bank would never talk to me like that."
Oh, wow.
And then she rang me. I was out at some party or something. This was obviously pre-COVID. I was out at some party and I got this call saying, "I think I might have made a mistake." And she was right on the cuff. So she'd identified her bank account. So we had to shut down all her bank accounts, cancel her cards. But the upshot was no money was taken.
Well, I mean, and that's a key point. And you mentioned 5G, which I'm curious about that may help. Yeah. In the longer term, why?
Possibly. Well, because it's a thoroughly more modern system where security has been thought about at the design stage rather than tacked on afterwards. You know, because although we've got 4G systems, a lot of the technology, you know, when we run our modern mobile phones, is legacy technology, and some of it, as I say, goes back in terms of the protocols, goes back to the 1970s. When, you know, it was a very different world in those days and we didn't have to worry about the things that we worry about now. So it's quite interesting because although there's all this fuss about how the Chinese are going to spy on us and shut down our economy if we use their equipment for 5G, and those are, you know, arguably legitimate concerns, there is the upside. So when you choose your technology, Jamoke, yeah, I guess I would say it like this. It's really a choice of who you want to spy on you. Would you rather have the Chinese spy on you, or would you rather be spied on by someone in this country? I mean, maybe, you know, when we take back control, maybe that's what we mean. We get scammed on by our own.
You know, I'm just sitting here with my mouth agape because I'm just thinking, I just don't know which way to turn. I mean, my goodness me. I mean, I don't think the Chinese would find me that interesting anyway. I mean, I don't think anybody would find me that interesting, but it is a conundrum for all of us about, you know, which way do you go? I mean, I suppose it's which danger are you willing to face if there is a danger?
So look, just to summarise, start with some skepticism. Don't just take at face value someone who rings you and says they are a certain person from a certain organization that they are. You don't need to be rude to them or, you know, anything like that, but just make them prove to you or in some way verify, either by, you know, taking their details and calling them back, asking them to put a note on your file. So even if you can't reach the same person, you get back. And if they're genuine, there should be a note on your file dealing with whatever it is they want to contact you about. Mm. But don't let them put you through security when you've no idea who they are.
Yeah. Well, listen, very wise words indeed. Always good to speak to you, Fedzi Turkalp, who is the editor at gadgetdetective.com. Very wise words.